Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, here with engineer Aladdin Al-Kathiri. Thank you for joining us to listen in. So it's Friday, so we're going to be hearing from Dennis Hart with a summary of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. But before that, I want to talk to you just for a minute about the Wild Ones. On Monday's Local Talk, I mentioned that the squirrel has started to engage us folks in the house through the window with intense eye contact, and the squirrel and his siblings also started hanging by their toenails from the roof overhang to reach the bird feeders. At first, I was mad at the squirrels because they chased away the birds, but then Aladdin, engineer here for Local Talk, gave me this insight that maybe the squirrel feels like he's our neighbor and is just behaving like a neighbor in need and asking for us to return neighborly, you know, relationship, because it does seem like almost everybody out there is hungry by now. And so over the weekend, I got a ladder and I moved the bird feeders farther away from the edge of the overhang, hopefully out of the squirrel's reach. And I put a tray of extra bird seed on the ground. So the squirrels went to the seed on the ground and the birds came back to the bird feeders. And the squirrels finally, with something in their belly, started sitting around looking kind of blissful in the sun. So all was well for a few days, but now the raccoons have discovered this little peaceable kingdom and have taken over the scene on the ground, and the poor little squirrel just kind of hopping from foot to foot on the edge, like on the sidelines, and once again has been moved out of the food chain. So that's my report from the Wild Ones, the ones who are right outside our windows right now in the snow and the ice. And now here's Mr. Dennis Hart.
Thanks very much. As always, it's good to be here on this Friday. And as always, let's start our news summary with a look back at last weekend, Saturday to be exact, when there was word that area lawmakers discussed a variety of topics, from school spending to job creation, during a forum sponsored by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. That forum came a week before the current legislative session's so-called funnel day, which is the first procedural deadline for bills to advance in the legislature or die for this year's session. Appropriation bills or government oversight bills are exempt from the deadline. Also last Saturday, a report on the first day of the Business Art Conference in Ames, which began last Friday. About 75 people were in attendance. Among the conversational topics, a survival guide for artists, which included such things as how to write contracts, get creative works copyrighted, and how to search for grants. Another topic, this one in the keynote speech, was called Taking the Leap, dealing with how to handle both setbacks and successes. Many of the speakers were from Central Iowa, but some were from other parts of the Midwest. And one more notable note from last Saturday, a report that four small towns from Story County had earned a spot on a list of the 20 best small towns in Iowa. The four are Roland, Gilbert, Slater, and Story City. The list was compiled by an online residential publication, Home Snacks. Among the categories that publication looked at in each small town, population density, unemployment rates, housing costs, adjusted median income, educational levels, commute times, and insurance rates. Sunday brought word that some area school districts were evaluating their options to make up days missed this year because of the seemingly nonstop winter weather that has forced them to cancel or delay classes on a regular basis since January. Ballard plans to add 5 make-up days at the end of this school year, meaning instead of ending May 28th as planned, school would now end June 4th. Gilbert has had 6 days missed for weather so far this year and may have to add extra days. But in Ames, there are no plans to add extra days because the district's current class time requirements are more than what's required by state law. Sunday also brought word that after a recent snowfall, the Ames Fire Department decided to make its interactive fire hydrant snow removal status map public so that residents can see where their nearest fire hydrants are and, if they want to, clear snow away from them. It usually takes firefighters 2 to 3 minutes to clear a hydrant, and if firefighters have to spend their time clearing one rather than fighting a nearby fire, it could make a big difference. Also Sunday, a report on how local Methodist pastors were reacting to the recent vote by United Methodist Church delegates to continue to oppose same-sex marriages and inclusiveness for LGBTQ members and clergy. The Reverend Jan Hibben of the Collegiate United Methodist Church in Ames said in her words, "We will continue to be who we always have been, open and affirming to all LGBTQ persons." Ames First United Methodist Church pastor Karen Kirkpatrick wanted more time to assess the information before commenting. Meanwhile, on Sunday, a report that the Ames United Church of Christ hosted its 35th annual Theologian in Residence weekend. Numerous speakers took part, with discussions focusing on current immigration laws and how to change them. And one more note from last Sunday, both the Iowa State University men's and women's basketball teams were in action on Saturday. The women's team defeated Texas 82-73. The men's team lost to Texas 86-69. Tuesday brought word that a hearing has been scheduled for a man serving a life sentence for the 1989 killing of a woman in Ames. 47-year-old Ruben Desus is seeking resentencing under a state Supreme Court decision that ruled sentencing a juvenile to life in prison without parole is unconstitutional. Desus was found guilty in 1990 of killing 20-year-old Jennifer Ann Gardner. He will be back in court April 4th, where a judge will hear evidence to determine what his new sentence will be. Also Tuesday, a report on a child survivor of the Holocaust who gave her story during a lecture at Iowa State University on Monday night. 84-year-old Inge Auerbacher said that telling her story was telling the story of 1.5 million children who were killed during that time. She and her family were transported from Germany to a concentration camp in Czechoslovakia, where they were put into bunks infested with bedbugs, rodents, disease, and hunger. But they were lucky. They survived and were liberated by the Soviet Army in May of 1945. They went back to Germany and stayed for 9 months before they came to America. There was more on Tuesday, including word that Prairie Rivers of Iowa had been awarded a grant from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. Prairie Rivers is a nonprofit group that's been working to improve water quality. It will use the grant to reach out to farmers and landowners in the Story County area. The project will continue through the year 2021. Also Tuesday, a report that applying for and accessing building permits in the city of Ames might become easier in the wake of the launch of a new 24-hour online portal called Citizen Self-Service through the city's website. It's designed to help users submit building and trade permits, as well as request and schedule building inspections, access an online archive of their permit history, and make service payments. It's a pay-as-you-go system, with users required to make payments for the permit before it will be issued. In addition, the new portal will let prospective home and property owners find permit information about potential sites using an interactive map. And one more note from Tuesday, the Iowa State University women's basketball team defeated Kansas Monday night, 69-49. Wednesday brought word that residents in Roland had approved construction of a new swimming pool during a special election on Tuesday. 82% of voters said yes to the $3 million project. Mayor Andy Webb said he's excited about the community support for the pool. At that same election, Roland voters also chose newcomer Kayla Schmitz to fill a vacant seat on the city council. She will be the only woman on the council after winning the seat with 175 votes. She was co-chair of the pool committee, which was instrumental in educating the public about the condition of the existing half-century-old pool and about the proposed design of the new pool. Also Wednesday, a report that the Story County Board of Supervisors had approved a resolution to enter a loan agreement to borrow up to $8 million for county road improvements that are tied to economic development. That $8 million has already been built into the proposed budget that is set for approval next week. Among the projects included in the bond, the paving of 220th Street at Lincoln Way near the Verbio plant in Nevada, and the extension of University Avenue by the Kelly Blacktop, which passes by the Iowa State University Research Park. The supervisors also provided staff direction in regards to the county's 2019 through 2024 capital improvements plan, which will be an agenda item on March 19th. That includes a potential increase in the Hickory Grove sewer project to $825,000. And at that same meeting on Tuesday, Supervisor Linda Merkin said she was keeping an eye out for two legislative bills, one that proposes restrictions for counties and cities to acquire land for recreation and conservation purposes, the other that would change how county supervisors are elected. Wednesday also brought word that Washington Governor Jay Inslee, who recently announced his candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination, stopped in Ames on Tuesday, where he met with Iowa State University students about their efforts to combat climate change. He heard presentations from representatives from two student groups during a meeting at the Memorial Union. Inslee said he looks at climate change as a rescue mission and a building mission. Also Wednesday, word that midshipmen from Iowa State University's Naval Reserve Officer Training Corps took part in a war simulation game on Tuesday, exposing students to realistic operational planning and execution. The war game exercises uses real-world headlines from operations in the South China Sea and introduces a hypothetical scenario in which a U.S. warship is damaged by hostile forces and an air crew is being held by hostile forces on a man-made island. The Iowa State midshipmen were tasked with both a retaliatory strike and a rescue of the downed aircraft. No classified information was used in the development, planning, or execution of the war game. Training for this operation started at the beginning of the fall semester. And one more note from Wednesday, the Ames High School boys basketball team lost in the quarterfinal round of the state tournament in Des Moines on Tuesday night. North Scott defeated the Cyclones 56-38. snapping the Ames team's 9-game winning streak that dated back to the middle of January. Thursday, yesterday, brought word that the Ames City Council had approved its 2019-2020 budget, which goes into effect July 1st. It came in at just more than $250 million, and it means the property tax rate will go down 4 cents. The council also heard word that Ames is on the short list of cities that could see the future development of a Hy-Vee Fast and Fresh store on the corner of South Dakota Avenue and Mortensen Road. Also yesterday, a report that the Ames School Board met with district administrators Wednesday to look at proposed updates for the Career Technical Education Program. There was also word that no one was injured in a shooting at an apartment complex in Huxley on Wednesday. It took place on National Drive just off Highway 69. Huxley's police chief said he did not recall a shooting in the 27 years he had been there. Also Wednesday, word that the man who died in a house fire northwest of Boone in January had been identified after DNA testing. The victim was 70-year-old Santos Guadalupe Calderon Alvarado. There was also a story about an Iowa State University male student who is working to develop a new type of razor for women. And, of course, there was a report on Wednesday night's Iowa State University men's basketball game against West Virginia. The Cyclones lost 90-75. And there you have it, your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, planning to take tomorrow and Sunday off, but promising to return right here to this very seat on Monday with a look at what made news around the state of Iowa. In the meantime, have a great weekend.
Life is full of tides and full oceans and hearts to shore, and I find it's like a heat of dancing feet keeping the body warm. I like the melodies in evergreens, roaming winds and rocky mountains, summer storms and hawks that warn innocent lambs, working hands and miraculous birth of a child who demands attention. I have been such a child, a life's a gift of arms that lift, baskets of fruit to share. And I find it's like a night of northern lights, startling the unaware. I like the whales at sea, the mysteries, Irish cliffs and desert flatlands, weathered barns and farmers' yards, arrows unfound, quiet towns and incredible death, though we know it is bound to happen. Singing with you, the best thing that could happen to me, my friend. You throw me back a voice that is a mighty bit more than making a dream come true. And when life is a burden and every heart we know is a hurting heart, the world is on trial, we're walking the mile, and singing with you is a start.
Singing with You by Holly Neer. Happy International Women's Day. If you are in the Ames area, come by the Ames Public Library at 6:30 for a wonderful International Women's Day celebration featuring local women in politics, kicked off by the fabulous Ames High Step Team. You will be glad you made the effort, I promise you. It's always a moment of great camaraderie and sharing for everyone that's there, and men, women, and children all are invited. That's at 6:30 today at the Ames Public Library. And if you have just joined us, this is Local Talk here in Central Iowa. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. On March 15th, around 11 a.m., the Climate Reality Chapter at Iowa State University, a student organization, will be leading an organized strike from classes in protest of inaction on climate change from all levels of government. This day will be the first time the United States joins thousands of students from across the world in these strikes from schools. They're standing in solidarity with the U.S. climate strike team and young people everywhere in demanding action from their legislators in the face of climate crisis. Gabby Heidrich is an Iowa State student, and she is with the Climate Reality Chapter at ISU, helping to lead the strike. So welcome to Local Talk, Gabby.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Good to have you. So, Gabby, tell us what's happening at Iowa State.
I am president of our Climate Reality Campus Core chapter at Iowa State. We are a group on campus that is looking to organize and advocate for transitioning to renewable resources as well as decarbonizing on our college campus. So right now we are pushing a resolution through our student government with the help of our faculty administration to just address the fact that Iowa State University does not have a climate action plan in place yet. A big part of that is just our energy grid as of right now is mainly sourced from our coal plant that's on campus. So 95.4% of our energy comes from our coal plant on campus, and only less than 1% of our total energy grid is sourced through renewable resources. So we're just trying to push the administration in the right direction and make them commit to some progress on our energy grid in the coming years.
So when you say you want Iowa State to have an energy action plan, what you're specifically saying is you want Iowa State to take its energy from renewable resources? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And because it's such a big project, considering we do have a coal power plant on campus, our initial goal is just for Iowa State to commit to 100% renewable electricity. So as of right now, 10% of our electricity is purchased wind power. So that's our only renewable resource that we purchase. We also purchase natural gas and I think petroleum. So our main goal that we're trying to do is the energy that we are purchasing and not producing on our campus, we want them to start purchasing renewable resources instead of petroleum and natural gas.
And what about the coal plant? Are you calling for the end of the coal plant, or what's your vision for that?
Yeah, the coal plant's a little bit of a bigger project. That's why we're kind of making a climate action plan, is because obviously change like this doesn't happen in 5 to 10 years. That coal plant's been there forever. They just invested like millions of dollars in buying new coal steamers. So that's kind of a problem that I'm assuming our chapter is going to be working on in the next 15 years. But that's why our initial goal is for Iowa State to commit to 100% renewable electricity by 2030, because that's a much smaller project. It's way more feasible.
Something you feel can be accomplished.
Yes, definitely.
What kind of communication do you have with the university? How do you work with them to do this?
Yeah, so we work with Mary Rankin, who was our she's our director of sustainability. Yes, and she's awesome. She's very receptive with us. She's very she likes to communicate with students and hear our ideas and our thoughts on things. We also have had meetings with Jeff Witt, who is the utilities director at Iowa State. So he's the one that has provided us with all the raw numbers, the data behind Iowa State's energy grid. And they both, you know, they listen to us. We have meetings with them. So they've been very helpful throughout this.
Do you feel that it's possible to start engaging them with you and you with them in some sort of real plan? In other words, has the rubber hit the road yet between you and them?
Yes, the rubber has hit the road. Not with their 100% commit to 100% renewable energy by 2030, but we have started with student government, who Mary works with a lot because they have a sustainability chair. They have written up and are getting pushed through an initiative regarding Iowa State creating a climate action plan, which is our first request. We just think that they need to say, okay, we are committing to creating a climate action plan.
So it's an acknowledgement that
yes,
things have to change,
exactly.
Essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your first step, is getting them to acknowledge that.
Yes.
And you feel they're doing that?
I feel that they are being receptive to students kind of crying out for, you know, we believe in science here. We are a university of science and technology. We want you to address that the IPCC said we have 12 years to rapidly decarbonize. And so, they've been really receptive. I mean, there's obviously obstacles with money and cost of things. But the fact that they are receptive enough to, you know, help us write a resolution, tell us the steps we need to take before we can commit to 100% renewable electricity is very optimistic to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. So this is kind of a long-range plan you're initiating.
Yes, yeah. I would prefer, obviously, if it did not take as long, but, you know, everything has obstacles. Obviously, money is a big thing, funding. So, yeah, that's why we just think it's important to lay out a plan so that, you know, we can look at ways to fund what we're trying to do. We can, like, put a longer time scale on it and set goals.
How many people are involved with the Climate Reality chapter at ISU?
So, yeah, our chapter is we have about, you know, 35 members, I would say. But they're all very, very active. We just had a meeting last night to, you know, talk about the last minute things we have to do for the climate strike on Friday.
And okay, so let's talk about the climate strike.
Yeah.
So presumably this is a symbolic strike because you seem to be on good terms with the university. But nonetheless, you're symbolically doing this? Explain.
Explain
the strike.
So the U.S. climate strike, as you explained earlier, it's just basically the United States catching up with all the youth climate strikes that have been going on throughout Europe and Australia. So it's our first climate strike here in the United States.
So this has been going on for a while.
Yes, yeah.
In other countries.
Greta Thunberg is a 15-year-old climate activist from Stockholm, Sweden, and she has been doing Fridays for Future strikes where she skips school on Friday to stand in front of the Stockholm Capitol to protest climate inaction. We just kind of got on board as allies of this strike. We think it's extremely important for youth to, you know, take a stand. It is our future that we are fighting for. Yeah, even though the university is being receptive to, you know, what we're asking them to do, we still think it's important to stand in solidarity with those around the country and also to not just protest the campus inaction, but to protest the U.S. government's inaction and dismissal of the climate crisis.
Is there a set of demands being read or?
Yes, we have a few keynote speakers. We have two from my club. We have other youth on campus that are very active in you know, political views and stuff like that. So they will be reading, you know, what the strike is for, what we're fighting for, what we're protesting. And then even though, like, it is easy to be angry and stuff, a lot of the speeches are going to be revolving around, you know, how great it is that youth are getting involved, what we can do here on campus in Ames to try to push the city and campus to decarbonize.
The idea that young people kind of are asking for a seat at the table now.
Right, yes. And even though, like, a lot of the activists that have organized the U.S. climate strike, there's one that's 12 years old, there's one that's 16, I think the other one's 16 too. But even though they can't vote, I think that it's important that we, as a country, you know, stand with science, stand with the youth and how youth obviously want to have a future, want to be able to consider having children and want to do normal things like have a career and stuff like that. And I think a lot of youth are scared of the future and just want to be heard by the government.
The young people that are involved with these have been kind of leaders internationally and nationally. They're so young that you can actually call them young people.
Yeah. Yeah, they are very young. I consider myself a little bit of a young person. I'm only 22.
Where does this come from inside of you?
I've always, I feel like, had a connection with nature and the environment, always been an animal lover. And I even remember, like, being as young as 11 and taking the train downtown in Chicago and looking at all the cars that we had and just thinking like, I hope that when I'm older, like we have better cars, or we have less cars, or we have something that's more sustainable. Because I've always worried about the environment.
That's always been on your mind.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And, I think I've always been interested in science. I went to a great school that we had a really good science program, and that's my majors are animal ecology and environmental studies. So I think it, was a combination of me being interested in the sciences and also me always being around nature, around animals, and, reading on it, reading about it on my own time.
So you feel a personal connection to the natural environment.
Definitely. Yeah, I think I have I feel guardianship towards it. A lot of my classes revolve around conservation and the protection of natural resources. And I think that some people need to make it their life goal to protect those resources for the public, for future generations. And so I feel like that is my role.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming in. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you. And we are speaking with Gabby Heidrich.
Gabby Heidrich.
And Gabby, what would you say on behalf of the natural world before you leave as a young person? You are still a young person.
Yes.
And so tell us what your message is personally. And then give us the logistics if anybody wants to be part of this event.
Definitely.
On the 15th.
Yep. So I guess my message would be we have one planet. We need to protect our natural resources for not only ourselves but for future generations. And we need to care. I mean, we need to show the government that we care about climate change, we care about this issue, and we want them to take a real stand against climate change and make some changes so that we can all continue to enjoy life as we know it. And then as for the march, so the march is, or the strike is on March 15th at 11 a.m. And we will be congregating in the free speech zone on Iowa State campus, which is right in front of the Parks Library. So you'll see a big crowd of people, I'm sure, and some speakers if you want to come. But yeah, bring your signs, bring your friends. Definitely bring a coat. We don't know what the weather is going to be like, but get energized and get ready to take a stand for climate change.
And this will be at 11 o'clock?
Yes, 11 a.m.
Uh-huh. And the strike part, are you literally asking people not to go to class, or is that just a word for?
Yeah, so the U.S. youth strike, the Ames High School is actually also participating, and they are going to, I think, skip one of their classes to protest in front of the school. But, yeah, the main thing is to skip class.
Be there at 11.
Right, yeah.
Be there at 11.
But if you have other classes, like, we're not going to be like, you have to skip. Like, it's okay.
So, the point is that young people are asking for a voice in the future of the climate, and this is on the 15th will be a good opportunity to hear some of those voices.
Exactly, yeah.
And
we're
going to hear it from the point of view of young people, right?
Yes, exactly. We'll have some speakers. It'll be an empowering experience. It's definitely not meant to just be angry, because we are doing good work. We are mobilizing and pushing for change, and I think that's the main message.
Well, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
And this is, it's a local talk. Come back and tell us how it went.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I would be definitely down to do that.
And this is Local Talk. If you've just joined us, we're on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thanks for stopping by. Lots going on. We're covering a lot of stories today about students and what's happening with them, an important part of the Ames community. The night before last, there was an unusual occurrence at Iowa State University that was both of these times nationally and globally, as the climate strike is, but also uniquely Iowa State. Nick Fuente, YouTube and podcast personality, who is a self-described nationalist and anti-immigration advocate, came to Iowa State University on Wednesday night. And it was a little unclear who invited him to ISU. It was assumed it was an ongoing campus group called Turning Point. According to Fuente, he came simply to give a speech to that conservative group on campus. but instead ended up getting a taste of Iowa weather, a late-night hike around the ISU campus, a tour of the ISU classrooms, a prolonged discussion with ISU students, as well as a healthy dose of Iowa nice. He finally delivered the speech he came to give on a kind of a snowy hill outdoors in front of the library late at night to a disgruntled crowd of hecklers. KHOI reporter Trey Moore and Preston Burris went to report and brought back just a few recorded moments to share with you. Here's Trey's description.
Trey Moore here at KHOI detailing the Nick Fuentes story. At 6:30 on Wednesday evening, me and Preston Burris were notified that Nicholas J. Fuentes, as he goes by on Twitter, was going to be giving a speech first, supposedly at the MU, then at Carver, and then ended up going to East, and then eventually ended up at the Tree of Oppression, or the Free Speech Zone, over by the library. Me and Preston headed over to Carver, where we found out that there were police outside of Carver Room 205, and the police were there because they didn't follow the right rules to bring a speaker to campus.
Got notified that a speaker was coming.
Okay.
And that he wasn't affiliated with Iowa State. And the proper channels to reserve a room and going through an actually affiliated group to have a speaker was not followed. There's certain channels that through the university they did not properly follow, and we were just told of that.
Okay.
So, I mean, if people definitely want to use 205 for homework and sit and wait, then they're more than welcome to do that.
You know, who the speaker is? He was brought here by two organizations, Turning Point USA and the College Republicans. It was a lot of people. It was about a room about 40 to 50 people. And it was very clicked up. A lot of the groups were separated and people weren't really interacting with each other. And they were all pretty much waiting for him to get there. And everyone's checking Nicholas J. Fuentes' Twitter to see where he is. I'm asking around to see who brought him. Can I get an update on what's going on? And no one's really wanting to speak about if they brought him there or not. Some of the people that came there, protest isn't the right word, but they came there to hear what this guy who is said to have to bring hate speech, what he's going to say, and, you know, why they brought him there. They were just there to witness what was about to happen. And so everyone's kind of talking amongst themselves, but in cliques. And some people are attempting to create dialogue between people on the opposite side. So the room's in a weird bit of tension. So I go out and try to get just a wide range of people's views on what was going on and to comment on the tension in the room.
As of right now, there's a lot of tension.
Odyssey Woodker, the president of the Black Student Alliance.
You definitely see a division within the races in the group. There's just a lot of kind of anger and stuff like that. It's kind of sad.
Like she said, it's a lot of tension in there. Feels kind of awkward, like we're divided into two groups. But another thing is, you don't know who's representing what side, because just because they're white doesn't mean that they're necessarily here to support the speaker. They just want to see the event.
My name is Jonathan Hall.
He's from the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity, a black male fraternity here at Iowa State University.
Today we have heard that a white nationalist is here speaking on his values and beliefs. And to us, we feel like it is an attack and a spread of hate speech against marginalized communities. And us as MPAC, we serve our lives just to make sure that these communities are intact. So at this point, we're just waiting for whoever shows up at this point, because we don't tolerate this spread of hate speech.
My name is Yahida Rhodes, and I go to Iowa State University, and I am the president of Black Student Alliance. A ISU Daily article showing that a white supremacist was going to come on campus today and basically give a talk. And so as a black community, we decided to unify and come stand up and show that we don't support hate or bigotry on our campus, and we are a community, and any minority, we don't want them to feel excluded or feel unsafe on our campus. And honestly, we're not necessarily concerned with who brought him. We're more concerned with the fact that we want to make sure everyone on our campus feels included and safe, and that hate and bigotry is not spread on our campus, because we all go here and this is a community that's for us.
My name is Ashton Ayers. I'm an Iowa State student. I heard that right-wing groups on campus had invited this white supremacist character to campus, and I looked him up and I looked into him, and I saw that he was saying really, you know, just bigoted things and actually advocating for violent things, and I think it's terrible. It looks like the people that are sponsoring this are outnumbered by people that oppose it, and I think that's the case on campus. So in the room, I mean, yeah, I think it's kind of tense, but I think it's clear that people mm-hmm. oppose this.
So the room was filled with, you have black students, you have black students from the black female sororities and the black male fraternities. You have some white students that were sitting in the back. You have the Daily. There were about four or five students from the Daily that were there kind of roaming around the place. You had a collective of white students in the back who I tried to get them to interview and they wouldn't really talk to me. And then you did have other white students who were there seemingly to oppose Nick. So you had a lot. You pretty much had everyone on the spectrum. This guy is claiming he's not coming here anymore. So whether or not he comes, we still have just unused energy of people in a room together. People, they want to talk. They're trying to talk to each other, but we don't want it to just be uncoordinated. So then we come to the front of the room, turn on the PA system, get the mic going, and we quiet everyone down and start passing the mic around and having one person talk at a time and talking. And they're going back and forth in their viewpoints. And that was pretty interesting. I got a good dialogue between Alexis Holmes and another gentleman in the room. I heard them going back and forth, and they were just having a really calm dialogue. They just had such a civil way of going about it.
Speaking on behalf of the CRs, college Republicans, he's no figurehead for, like, the Republican Party.
Right.
He's not teaching anything. He's going after people. He's using vulgar language and attacking people. Like, the vile stuff he says shouldn't be tolerated, especially from the conservatives and the Republican Party. Most conservatives don't stand with him. I, especially as a conservative, don't like anything that he says. Most of it's pretty vulgar. This guy's not starting a dialogue. He's just going on rants and tirades, just attacking people. And he's really just grouping people together, attacking them, and that's not fair. I'd rather talk to you like how we were talking
right.
on a dialogue. Because then I understand you better, you understand me better. And that's like the real point we're trying to get at.
A lot of people came out to just kind of like hear this person to see what are they really about and why was this person brought, who were the people behind him even bringing them here. So I think at this point we're just trying to figure out what we can actually do to work as a community to make sure that, you know, everyone's voices are being heard, but making sure that we're not promoting those antagonizing type environments.
We do want to hear both conservative, liberal, and even independent speakers, because that's the best thing is just knowledge that we can gain as students. We're all young. We're still, like, learning ourselves. And
someone has to be a little bit more firm in them saying, yes, we invited this person, or no, we didn't. But when it comes to someone with that sort of reputation that he has, it's very difficult to have something like that come to campus in a very organized manner because there's always going to be almost an uproar about it. I do have mixed emotions about his presence even being here on campus. I understand free speech and things of that nature. However, you unintentionally end up parading someone sometimes where it's like, oh, my intent was to, you know, break them down point by point, but sometimes the impact is, oh, here's this person. These are all the things, like, these are all the things he stands for. You might stand for them too.
We should, as a university, probably bring more debates onto campus. I think free speech is probably, like, the best thing we have as college students because, you know, we're still, you know, at university trying to learn. And as we work through our what we're learning, that intellectual diversity on campus makes us better human beings at the end of the day. As Iowa, like, we're the stage for the, you know, presidential election. I think that's something that we should use as students to our power. Like, as college students, we should really, like, get involved.
What do you think should happen in this room now that everyone's there and there's all this energy?
Everybody's already gathered in a room, so people would like to discuss or ask questions appropriately and within the right tones and within the right phrasings. We should be able to ask each other those questions and have those dialogues. We are adults. We are young adults. We're college students, so we know how to have intellectual conversations and figure out how people stand for what they stand for, why they do, and would they be open to changing or accepting, like, hey, we're just not going to be on the same side of the cookie.
The best thing that probably could happen, you know, if anyone wants to stay and, like, talk things out and see where we are on this, you know, standpoint, I think that would be beneficial for both groups. But, like, I think that was, like, the best thing that could have happened tonight was him not showing up and us being actually get a platform where we can understand each other, like, on a personal basis.
Then we got word that Nick was at East Hall. I guess, I don't want to say hiding, but he was in East Hall, and that word got out, so everyone immediately left the room. So we all parade over as a group to East Hall. Nick didn't really get to speak. The cops They escorted him out and said, you have to go to this free speech zone. That's the only place you're going to be allowed to speak.
Yeah, I'm going to get my things. So I guess we're going to the tree of what?
Tree of oppression.
The tree of oppression, I guess that's what it's called. I don't know. We're getting kicked out of this room. We don't have a reservation, apparently. I don't know. I'm not the organizer. I don't know why I'm being asked all these questions.
They bailed on me. Can you believe that?
Some loyalty. It was members of... it was originally the CRs, and then I believe Turning Point took over the event.
But they bailed on you.
They bailed on me.
So they left you hanging.
They left me hanging.
So you think people shouldn't come to you?
And that's how we ended up walking over to the free speech zone, right in front of the library, in front of the building that used to be the hub. It used to be called the hub, but now it's another ISU dining place, but right in front of the library.
Border crossings went down by 99% in Israel, where they built a wall. Turkey's building a wall. Hungary's building
a wall. But their wall isn't thousands of miles long, though.
Yeah, we're going to have a mile that's thousands of miles long. The larger part of the picture is what happens to the country culturally. What happens to the country culturally when you bring in
culturally happening to the economy?
Actually, that's a good point. This is something I'll address in my speech.
Immigrants do pay significantly higher taxes.
This is something. Okay.
Thank you.
This is something I will bring up in my speech. If you look at GDP.
And so we're gathered there, and he steps on like a little cement thing to get, you know, a little bit elevated over everyone so he can speak and project his voice. And so he begins to speak, and slowly the tensions just rise because, you know, people are disagreeing with what he's saying. He's saying a lot of statements, and a lot of them, you know, when people ask him to cite sources, he didn't cite any sources. And, you know, he's making a lot of blanket statements and were offending some people. So, you know, there were those in the back of the group making noises and pretty much trying to shut down his entire speech. You know, he keeps going and they eventually, you know, quiet down. And then over time, the tensions rise again. He does call one of the gentlemen from the LGBTQ community a retard. And then he does say F you to someone else in the crowd. And at that point, one of the officers kind of gets closer to him because he can see that the tensions are getting pretty riled up. And after that point, he steps down and they kind of walk him to the library and they escort him out of the side door of the library. Yeah. And this was about a span of like 4 hours.
You said originally he wanted to talk to his people. He didn't want to talk to other people. Why do you think he ended up making this speech outside? He didn't have to do that.
I think since he was already here, he's just like, okay, let's do it. But I have a slight theory that he did it because he saw that as an opportunity to make his platform get a broader audience. Pretty much just benefit, and I don't know if profit's the right word, but benefit off of all this attention. Because, you know, you could see when people had the cameras on them and everyone's posting it on their social media that he's just like smiling, even though, you know, they're getting annoyed at some of the things he's saying. He's just up there like smiling, and you see he's getting a lot out of that. So I think he eventually did it because he figured, wow, this will actually help my platform more than just speaking to my own people, which probably wouldn't have done.
Do you think this was kind of like a weird entertaining night at Iowa State, or do you think this was a meaningful interaction and event?
I think it was both. No one knew that when they showed up to Carver, they would be dragged out for like 3 to 4 hours going from building to building, trying to find this guy and just like all this energy. It really was like an unprecedented event for everyone that showed up. So entertaining in that aspect, but then interesting because it showed ISU's community and the sense of community. There were a lot of people that from different groups who were actually talking to each other, kind of coming together for the fact that they just weren't going to let this guy, you know, sit up here and say all these things. So I think it was a good thing to see as far as the ISU community coming together.
is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio for Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for listening in. And thank you, reporter Trey Moore, for that report on the occurrence of a presentation at Iowa State a few days ago by a nationalist anti-immigration advocate and the student response to that presentation. We've been hearing stories about students today on Local Talk, and in the last few minutes of the show, I wanted to share some interesting thoughts, both on student life and immigration, that kind of bring the two together in an interesting way. Last weekend, the United Church of Christ had a theologian in residency program, and they brought Dr. Reverend David Vasquez Levy, who is the president of the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, to talk about immigration. And he mentioned to me that he saw students as very similar to being immigrants. And I asked him about that. I thought it was kind of relevant to the world we live in here in Ames. So here's what Dr. Vasquez Levy had to say about that.
You know, I often think of migration as a framework for human life, you know, what it means to be human, you know, whether it is our migration from childhood into adulthood or from work life into retirement. There's a lot of transitions we experience as humans, and we need to, in those transitions, do the kind of work that an immigrant does, which is to determine what of the new communities we are joining we will adapt into and what of our previous identity or community we will carry with us.
When you were working at Luther College, can you think of an experience or something that a student described to you that you think expresses that similarity between a student and an immigrant?
Yeah, I mean, I think of several, and the ones that are most obvious to me is in students, what I would call discernment of vocation. So that's a mouthful, right? Discernment is sort of sorting out what it is that they would want to be. So college students will come to campus in their first year either with a real clear idea about what they think they want to be, and that's influenced, again, by their childhood expectations, family professions, the expectations about the kind of money you should make or the values that they've been given by their family. And then once they're in college and they're experimenting with various classes through a number of different forms of knowledge and possibilities, all of a sudden you really have to discern your calling. What is it that you're in the world to do? And those are big, big questions. And so that's the place where I see young adults often discerning, you know, thinking about that moment almost again as an immigrant who's all of a sudden in a very different environment. So I've often thought of the development of a child into an adult as a migration experience in the sense that the child is entering a new world and needs to learn a new language, like any immigrant. That may be the language of their profession. So you're taking all these courses that teach you mathematics in much more complex ways, or science, or theater, or English, whatever your major is. So you're literally learning a new language, expanding your vocabulary and trying to understand that. Like an immigrant, you're also being introduced to a completely new system, oftentimes of values, convictions, beliefs that are maybe different from the ones you grew up in. Students literally often migrate. Certainly the way our educational system is right now for college, the majority of people will make a significant move to go to university or college. And so they're having a physical experience of migration. Some of that is by design. You know, we believe that it's important to take people out of one context into another context so that they can learn. You know, so the idea of full-time education in a residential community is that we can create an experience that allows people to immerse themselves in an educational experience in other cultures, in other communities, and learn. But still, the model remains that education is a transformative experience, that it brings you outside of your regular context and expands your world. If you grew up in a rural area and you're going to school in a more urban setting, there is a huge shock that you're having to kind of negotiate. And in that process, you have to, like an immigrant would, figure out what of the culture you grew up with, the values you held, the convictions, your faith, your tradition, what of that will you carry into your adult life? And the reality is you can't succeed as an adult with simply a mimicking of your childhood values, convictions, and views. They need to be integrated with what you are discovering and learning. But at the same time, like any immigrant, you cannot fully assimilate and lose your own identity without paying a significant price. So part of the work a young adult has to do in maturing is sorting through their own childhood values, convictions, family of origin, and determine what of that will be important for them to carry into their adult life. Mm-hmm. And that's a negotiation. We kind of figure out, what do we need into our adult life? What has consistency about who I am that I want to carry into my adult life? And what are the new things I want to learn? Mm-hmm. So I think when it comes to educational experience, thinking about that experience as a migration is helpful for development, not only to think about that transition from childhood into adulthood, but then to think about what are the skills we can learn that will be transferable skills to other experiences of migration we may have in our adult life. So once you complete your education, a student is going to go into a new community oftentimes. So what have they learned in that first experience of displacement, going to college, that is a transferable skill that then will allow them to succeed as they go into a new setting? Similarly, later in life, it may be a transition of cultures of different jobs. So you go from one profession to another. The idea that you enter one profession and stay in it for the rest of your career is less and less likely. And so learning skill sets of an immigrant to sort of adapt and improve is a life skill that will serve you well. So thinking about that early development in the context of migration helps you then to identify the skill set that you might need as you experience later migrations in life. Mm-hmm. All the way into the end of your life. Because now when people end their work life, rather than a simple process of I'm done, I retire today, and then I start golfing tomorrow, that transition is no longer the case. People's later adult life is significantly longer. They're also having to negotiate identity into what does it mean to be a retired person for 30, 40 years. You know, it's very different than previous generations, even just recently, have had to navigate. And so those same skill sets need to be figured out. How do I take elements of my identity, my work life, my pay, my, you know, the way that those things gave me identity as I enter a new place, mm-hmm. you know, in which my definition of self may not be tied completely to my job and that definition, but I'm entering a new world in retirement. So that's where I find the model of migration helpful. There's both a limitation, but there's also a freedom. All the expectations of what you should be and what you ought to be, all of a sudden are not there, and so you have this remarkable creativity. The immigrant labor force is quite generative and creative in the United States. Immigrants establish more small businesses than any other part of the population because of the creativity and mobility, and then the possibility of adopting a completely new identity and a new path.
What do you think about this process?
Well, I think, you know, part of our anxiety as a society around immigrants, there's a number of reasons why we live with fear about immigrants, you know, and it may be in part because we, you know, have either made up or real concerns about economy, security, safety, and all these other things. But I think part of what happens is that immigrants represent a level of vulnerability we are uncomfortable with. Yeah. So the larger picture for me is that being aware of our migratory nature, mm-hmm. of the fact that we are not permanent human beings, mm-hmm. no matter what kind of buildings we build, we're still our society, our culture, our communities are not here forever. You know, they're mobile, they're transformative. So coming to be okay with being an immigrant. So I think part of our anxiety about immigrants is because they represent a level of vulnerability and change we're sometimes not comfortable with.
Agents of change, right?
Yeah, they are agents of change, and also sometimes not just agents, but the subjects of change, you know, and so we see in them a level of vulnerability we're uncomfortable with, mm-hmm. you know, in a way is our anxiety towards teens, for example, you know, mm-hmm. there is a phrase that I often use in presentations around young adult development that I can't remember the exact quote, but it says something like, you know, kids these days, they're rude, they don't stand up when their parent, you know, when the adults are in the room, this, that, and the other. And then I ask people to identify the quote. The quote is actually from Aristotle, you know. Even that far back, there was the sense that kids these days, right? So every generation struggles with the next generation and their behaviors. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason is because teens, particularly, you know, those who are migrating from childhood into adulthood, make us very aware of what it means to be an adult. What we get anxious about with teens, for example, is we don't want them to do adult things. We don't want them drinking adult drinks. We don't want them watching adult movies, you know, because when they do, it feels like, oh, that's dangerous, that's bad, that's not good. So in a way, they are such a mirror of the worst things of what it means to be an adult. In fact, we don't want them to become adults in those ways, because as adults, whatever ambivalence we have about being an adult, when we see a child doing it, we realize, oh, that's not good. So they're too much of a mirror of actually who we are. Mm-hmm. And the ways we have created our actions in society. Does that make sense? So I think some of our anxiety about immigrants is they represent a vulnerability in us we'd rather not think about.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio for Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays. And also remember that you can hear a recording of the show later today online at khoifm.org on our homepage, and you'll find links to the guests and information about what you heard during the program. Also remember the KHOI streaming live at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Singing With You by Holly Neer and Piscean by Ralph Towner. Local Talk is a radio production, workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. See you tonight at the International Women's Day celebration at the Ames Public Library, 6:30 to 8:30. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.